Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Now, the six peninsular states will be heading to the polls on August 12th as a total of 245 assembly seats will be contested in Kedah, Penang, Terengganu, Kelantan, Negeri Sembilan and Selangor. Now, the question is, what should we be keeping an eye on over the next few weeks? Joining me on the show today, I have James Chin, who is a professor of Asian Studies at the University of Tasmania in Australia. He is in town and it's a pleasure to have him in the studio with me. It's good to see you in person instead of a screen, James. You know, I thought we would begin our conversation before we get into the state elections. Because you have lived abroad for so long and are watching what the international community is saying about Malaysia, I'm curious to know your gauge of where Malaysia is in the eyes of the international community, also in the eyes of the Malaysian diaspora overseas.
Right. Thank you very much. It's always good to see you. So I think the starting point for this is last year's general election. I think a lot of people, especially the Malaysian diaspora overseas, were hoping to repeat. If you remember the election before that, there was a huge movement for the overseas voters to take part. And I think they tried to mobilise along similar lines, although they were not as successful as the other general election. I think the overseas Malaysians were really keen on electing the so-called unity government. I think there was a lot of support for Pakatan Harapan, and I think the real excitement came on the night of the elections. I think for the international community and the Malaysian living overseas, I think there was a bit of tension because a new government was not announced. But I think the thing that really shocked everybody overseas, including the international observers and the people in Malaysia, was how well PAS did. I think the green wave was not only a big surprise in Malaysia, but it was also a big surprise overseas. But eventually, I think the international community and the Malaysian diaspora overseas were very happy that Anwar was given a chance to form a government. I think for many Malaysians living overseas, what they want is Malaysia to be a progressive modern state.
Right.
And unfortunately, they don't see that happening on the side with PAS. They see PAS as sort of a very conservative government who wants not to say stop Malaysia from developing, but they want to develop Malaysia in a conservative way.
Okay, so that was the concern with the green wave for the
That's international community.
That was in November, but now 7 months down the road, how do they view the Anwar Ibrahim leadership?
I think for the international community, the most important mark in the last 7 months was the budget. So it was quite clear that it was quite an even budget. It wasn't an election budget. Anwar didn't ask for any big project, big shiny project. The budget was a very well thought up budget to put Malaysia back on track. So I think that got him a lot of support in the international community. You also have to remember that because Anwar was opposition icon for such a long time, many people in the West actually saw Anwar as an emerging leader in the Muslim community, somebody who could merge the Western idea of democracy with Islamic politics. You have to step back sort of a few steps to understand that, you know, back in the 1980s with the rise of political Islam, coming in the 1990s, the war fought in Afghanistan and ISIS and all that sort of thing, the West essentially was looking for a modern Islamic democrat, so to speak. Initially, they thought Indonesia could be that. Then they look at Turkey, and now they're having second thoughts. They're saying that these two has not worked out the way it should be. So they're looking for a new leader, and they think that Anwar can be that leader. To be fair to Anwar, I think early on in his career, he did cultivate a lot of relationship, especially with the academic circles in the West. So that's the reason why he's very well regarded in the West as somebody who was very widely read. You never heard people call Ismail Sabri Mujahidin Yassin as somebody who was widely read, but you always hear about that with Anwar overseas. So I think in the Western circle, at least, I think a lot of them really want to support him. They want him to be successful. And I think for the overseas Malaysian diaspora, increasingly, you know, they want ANUR to succeed as well. So that's the reason why this coming state elections in the six states are so crucial.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, because it really feels like, even though it's state elections, it feels very high stakes for the federal government. Why do you think that it is, that's the sentiment that it's high stakes? What is at stake? And do you think that the state elections could affect the stability that the federal government has found with its unity government?
Sure. To answer your first question, why is this state election such an important thing? Basically for two reasons. The reality is that among the whole voting population in Malaysia, even though they're not voting, only the people in the six states, people see this as an indirect referendum on the ANUR administration. I think it's very important that people in Malaysia realise that, you know, this government wasn't elected. It was put together post-election, right? The reality is that Pakatan and UMNO and Barisan Nasional were fighting each other. So they were sort of a forced marriage after the election. So this is an indirect referendum. The second reason why people take this election seriously is because of the green wave. It is quite clear on the other side, it doesn't matter how you count it, but basically they have the majority of the Malay vote last round. I know some academics say it's about 60%, some say it's about 70%. But basically on the governing side, Barisan Nasional plus Pakatan, you had less than 50% on the Malay vote. Now, one of the sort of called unwritten rules of Malaysian politics in recent times is that you cannot be stable if the majority population do not support you. So people are waiting to see. Because one of the interesting things about this election, don't forget, the three heartland Malay states are going for elections, Kelantan, Terengganu and Kedah.
Okay.
So from the election, from the electoral data collected after this, you will know whether Anwar Ibrahim and his government plus Zahid can claw back the Malay vote. Because if they don't claw back the Malay vote, then they will be leading a very unstable government. Because right now, right, you can see on the other side, they're playing basically two or three narratives. One is, of course, what they've always used, that this Malay government is not Malay enough, right? And it's not Islamic enough, or Malays and Islam are marginalized. But increasingly, they're also playing, you know, the narrative that this is not a legitimate government because you did not win the Malay vote. So you can see very clearly. Mahathir Awang keep repeating it. So you can see that this is a crucial state election. If Anwar doesn't win the Malay vote this time around, most people tell me that the government will be very unstable. Because on the other side, they will just keep harping Malays marginalised, Islam marginalised, even worse, this is not a real government because the majority of Malaysians do not support this government. And when they talk about majority, they talk about the Muslim population, of course.
Okay, so clearly it's an important round of elections. Can we look at the states? Are there any states in particular that are up for grabs, are in jeopardy of flipping? Let's begin with the PH Health states, Penang and Negeri Sembilan Selangor. Are they in safe hands? Are they in danger of flipping?
Sure. Right. The way to understand this is that if you go to the so-called people who does this, so-called the underground betting business, right? At the present moment, most people believe that it will be status quo, it will still be 3-3 after the elections. In terms of flipping the states, the 2-1 that is possible flip is, of course, Kedah and Terengganu. These are the two obvious ones that can flip. But in terms of the voting pattern, right, people will be watching closely Kelantan, Terengganu and Kedah. Most people think that it's almost impossible to flip Selangor and Penang, because the majority of Pakatan is so large that you can reduce the majority, but you cannot defeat them.
Okay, okay. So reduce the two-thirds majority.
Yes, absolutely.
But is that enough to shake the PH confidence? Because what constitutes victory for PH would be status quo. Losing any seats would be
that is the
shaking.
Wrong way of looking
no?
at it.
No? Okay, how
the
how
right
should
way
we
of looking
at it
is you look at the Malay vote in Kedah, Terengganu, Kelantan, Seberang Perai, and the Malay population in Selangor, and the Malay population in Negeri Sembilan. I hate to say this, but the non-Malay vote doesn't count, and the reason why it doesn't count is because it's very obvious since the last few elections, right? Overwhelming majority of non-Malays will support Pakatan because of DAP and PKR, right?
Okay.
So that vote is already locked in. So people are looking at the Malay vote.
Okay, all right. Talk to me about how the Malay vote, voter sentiment, might have evolved over the last 7 months. Can we use GE15 voting patterns as a barometer of how people might vote in this state elections?
My personal answer is that probably not. The reason is we don't have enough data. Many of those who voted for the very first time, we know, especially the younger one through the Saluran results, they supported Perikatan. We don't know whether they're going to follow a similar pattern. The only thing I can say is that it is much easier for Perikatan to reach out to these young voters, not because of TikTok again, not because of social media. Those will play an important role. But it's much easier to sell you a product that you've already bought once, right? This is the classic marketing thing, right? So, for example, if you've been driving this brand of cars, right, when it's time for you to change your car, it is very likely that you will change to the same brand, of course, a newer model. My point is that if these young people have already voted for Perikatan once, or in Terengganu, they voted for PAS once already, right, it's much easier to reach out to this group.
Is MUDA a third force to be reckoned with?
No, MUDA is not a third force to be reckoned with. My position on MUDA is very clear. MUDA should be on the side of Pakatan stroke Barisan Nasional. They should not put up third candidates. The reason for me saying that is very, very simple. If you look at what's happening now, right, on the other side, Perikatan, on the opposition side, basically they're collecting anybody and everybody who's against Anwar. So the only logical thing to do on this side, on the government side, is that they should bring all the political forces that is against Perikatan, against Bersatu, against PAS.
Together.
Yes.
So safety in numbers. Why hasn't it worked out that way, James?
It hasn't worked out for many reasons. Part of it is personality clash. Because, how should I put it, some of the younger MUDA people have problems dealing with some of the older people. But I think it basically comes down to this. There was a big hoo-ha last general election, as you know. They fought very hard and they were given a certain number of seats. They did not deliver.
Okay.
So people are said that you cannot deliver. But increasingly, I think attitude on the government side, their attitude has hardened towards MUDA, because everybody says that, you know, MUDA, not only did they not deliver, they cannot be trusted fully 100%, because people said that, how should I put it, you know, a former prime minister was behind the formation of MUDA. Now, whether it's true or not, it
doesn't... Can't shake that perception,
yes, you can't
is
shake
it?
The okay. perception. So it is quite hard. But my position is that you don't actually have to bring MUDA into Pakatan formally, right? There are existing models that allows MUDA to be part of your group, you know, the group that faces the other side, without being a formal member. I'm sure a lot of your viewers will remember that when Barisan Nasional was in power, it had lots of small parties supporting Barisan Nasional, but they were never given any seats, right? They were called friends of Barisan Nasional.
Right.
You know, they were never given any seats. So you can have that model where even though MUDA wants to be a former member of Pakatan, you don't have to.
Friends of Barisan Nasional, you know, friends of Perikatan.
You know, you can bring them Pakatan. In. Mm. And, you know, if Anwar does very well, you can reward them other ways. You know, the most obvious reward system in the Malaysian political system is that, you know, if Anwar wins hands down with the support of MUDA, you can select one or two of the most senior leaders in MUDA and make them senators. I mean, it is not a zero-sum game. This is why I don't understand why they can't see this.
Okay.
You know.
I want to get you to elaborate on something you mentioned a little bit earlier about how on the other side, we have this anti-Anwar club. Can you elaborate about the joining of forces of those who are against Anwar?
Right. So you can see very clear for the last 3 months, right? 3 or 4 months, right? All the small Malay NGOs, they've all come together and they all basically are going to support Perikatan side. You know, they used to come together, they all used to come under the Malay Proclamation thing. Now they've transferred the support to Perikatan, primarily because of Mahathir Mohamad. So basically on the other side, right, what they want to do is to create a political force of everyone saying that this government must fall. Mm. So anybody who supports the, you know, the fall of the Anwar government or who is against Anwar, you can join them. So it's sort of an open door, a big tank approach. And I think they're doing in a very clever way. So they're doing it by not making any conditions or whatever. So that's the reason why you start seeing pictures of Mahathir meeting with leaders of Bersatu. And you notice that when they issue the press release, right, they always say that, you know, it's a friendly call, no deals were made. So the idea is that you want to build a, you know, everybody who's against Anwar, who's against this unity government, come on our side. We don't guarantee you anything, we're not promising you anything, but we only come together because we want to get rid of this government. And I think that is the right strategy.
It's a smart strategy. We're going to take a very quick break. We'll be right back on Consider This to continue this conversation. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. I'm chatting today to longtime political observer James Chin, who is a professor of Asian Studies at University of Tasmania in Australia. He's in town and we managed to catch some time with him. James, your commentary on Malaysian politics often triggers points of discussion in public discourse. And I'm quite curious to know how you see, as someone who is outside of Malaysia, bird's eye view, how do you see Malaysia's political landscape changing? And what do these changes, how are they significant to the way we are living today?
Right. I think the first thing that came out very clearly in the last several months is that all the rules we understand about Malay politics or Malaysian politics in general are out the window. So anything is possible now. I mean, who would have thought that, for example, Tun Mahathir, the author or the person who projected this plan called Wawasan Duak Peluh Duak Peluh and Bangsa Malaysia has turned a full circle and said that multiracialism is out. There's no such thing. That the Federation of Malaysia is really a Malay state. So, you know, everything that we understand about Malaysian politics, the rules doesn't apply. Who would have thought that, you know, DAP is quite happy and tell the supporters, please support UMNO candidates. You know, all these things is you know, unheard of even a few years ago. People thought this can't happen. This has happened. But what really concerns me about Malaysia is not only that there's no more rules about what's going to happen to the country, but now it is very clear, especially if you listen to people like Hadi Awan, Mahathir, and a few other senior leaders in Malaysia, that there's basically three visions for what Malaysia is. And I'm very worried because I'm worried that these three visions find it very difficult to gel. In other words, they don't have a common area, right? The first vision is the vision put out by people like Mahathir, Hadi Awan. This is a Malay Islamic state, right? Malaysia is basically a Malay state. Islam is a central character of this state, okay? This is not me saying it, everyone knows it. You just have to follow Hadi Awan on his Facebook and this is the message he keep repeating, right? The second vision is, of course, the vision put up by, for lack of another example, is people like the DAP. Malaysia is progressive, you know, not 100% secular, but we follow the constitution. You know, we are very liberal, very modern. You know, we want to progress up to the next level. We accept that Malaysia is a multiracial society. In terms of religion, everybody have the right to practice a religion, but we recognize Islam is the religion of the Federation.
Okay.
So these two areas, and my point is that there's very little overlap. You can't overlap because they're very different. And the third vision, of course, is that the people from Sabah and Sarawak. Okay. So the people of Sabah and Sarawak said that, you know, we enter the Federation of Malaysia on a set of understanding of what Malaysia should look like. And we never got a piece of the action. And in fact, you not only push us around, for lack of a better word, you took out all our resources, but we have been invisible in the system for 50 years, right? So for example, right, if I were to ask you, you know, outside, of course, in Sabah and Sarawak, if I ask you to name the ethnic group, you tell me, oh, Kedazan Dusung, Iban Dayak. But beyond that, Sarawak has actually 26 major ethnic groups, right, officially. for the census. You can't tell me beyond that, right? Mm. So they're saying that what happened to Malaysia, what happened to the promise of Malaysia. So these are three separate visions for Malaysia. And the reason why I feel that there is inherent tensions and that it doesn't gel together is because if you look at the outcome of last year's election, right, who are the two biggest blocs in parliament? The two biggest blocs is PAS on the one hand, promoting, like I said, vision number one. And the second biggest bloc is DAP, promoting the other vision, right?
Right.
And then you got Sabah, Sarawak with GPS, which is the third bloc. Together with Sabah, they control about 36 GRS. So you see, each of these blocs, right, they have their own vision, but there's no common ground.
So what are the consequences of having three separate narratives that don't gel?
Well, the obvious one is that you have tensions in the political system and people get more and more frustrated.
Do you see this as reasons for more rising polarization in Malaysia?
Look, it's not rising polarization, it's already here. Right? I mean, yes, it is true that social media doesn't reflect reality because of the cyber troopers, whatever it is. But those people who are not involved in all these things, right? Mm. You can see the views are already happening. You can see that, you know, it's really a highly polarized society. And the reason I said it is very obvious because everybody is trying to spin an ethnic or a religious angle to every major incident you can think of. The most recent one, which your listeners will know immediately, is you have a minister who went to an immigration area because the person that tahan immigration was connected, right? She obviously placed a call to you-know-who and the minister had to come in, right? So if you look at the Malay social media, especially the more right-wing ones, they're spinning the story that he's only helping Chinese, playing the ethnic angle, or they're saying that there's some secret connection. He's involved in this, involved in that, human trafficking, whatever it is, or the girl is connected to him in intimate terms, whatever it is. So they're playing this angle and say that he's a Chinese minister. You know, he has no respect for the civil service. That's why he barged in. If you look at the Chinese social media, they're saying that, oh, it's a very good thing because the minister turun padang. You know, he take direct action. And he says that, you know, corruption in immigration, maybe the word corruption is too strong a word to use. How should I say it? This sort of special deals done in immigration, right? It's a long-standing issue, right? It is not like you know this thing happened overnight. But you can see the different sort of narratives that's been put out, and this is due to a polarization. If the country was not so polarized, then the narrative would be different. Then the narrative would be to call an investigation to find out what really happened. Do we need to reform immigration? But nobody talks about reforming immigration. People just get caught up in all this narrative. Right. You know, they say that, why should a minister have to barge into that, do this sort of thing?
Do you see any way forward that these narratives don't go even more off tangent and diverge away from each other?
I think what is very important is that those who believe in Middle Malaysia must stand up. I don't know why, but it seems to me that those who believe in the middle path, right, they're afraid to put their hands up or they're afraid to stand up. Now, if you were to ask me why, my best guess is that they don't want to stand up because they will get hit. Right? They'll get hit by the right wing from
the extremes. Right?
Not the extreme, but they're not the right wing from their individual group, right, who will push them down. Because they know if they stand up and say that I support Middle Malaysia, right, then somebody will use the religious angle or the ethnic angle to attack them. Mm. And most people, you know, middle of the road, right, they do not want to do this. Now, those people who follow me on social media will know that I always try to take the middle path as much as possible. But even then, they accuse me of all sorts of stuff. so it's a very, very difficult problem. The good news is, I strongly believe that despite all of Anwar's flaws, at the present moment, he's probably the best thing we can hope for Malaysia. So I'm really, really hoping that the unity government will do well in this election because I think we need a strong period of political stability.
But James, what if they don't do well? What are the consequences? What might happen then?
Okay. If they lose the Malay vote, you will have a period of instability and Anwar may even fall from government. I mean, that is the reality. People say he cannot fall because the numbers are with him. people keep forgetting, right? The thing about the anti-hopping law is that it is much easier to pull down a government, because if the party decides to move as a bloc, even if you disagree, you have to give the vote to the party. In the old days, right, if I want to pull down a government, right, I have to physically drag every MP across. Now I don't have to. I just have to bring one or two blocs. And the thing about the Malaysian political system, right, I know a lot of people don't like to hear this, right? When the process of government, when they falls and they put together, right, none of the things that matters before that comes into play. For example, race, religion, all those things doesn't count anymore. What counts is who gets into power. Okay? The other thing is that people have short memory. People keep forgetting that GPS actually support Mujahideen.
Yes. Yes, right? Work together
exactly.
Quite closely.
So they just changed 24 hours. So this is why I said that, you know, the moment the herd mentality starts, they think this government is going to fall and a new government is formed, right? All the normal so-called divide doesn't apply anymore because they move as a bloc. Everybody wants to be in government because that's the only game in town.
James, thank you for being on the show today, sharing your insights. I appreciate your time. That was my conversation with political analyst James Chin. And that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.